what you've had. What are your front lines? What are the places? Where are the places? Who are the people that you would describe as your front line? For me, it's a few days of the week. It's in the office. Sometimes it's washing up in the labs in the place that I work, because when there's not enough office work to do, you have to just put your hand up and join in with the washing up, sadly. It's quite good because I get to wear a white coat and say, I am a real scientist wearing a white coat, washing up cylinders. I'm not sciencey enough to know what to do with the cylinders, but I can wash them up. So for me, that's my front line. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is being in an officey place or sometimes washing up. The rest of the time it's with the kids, the people that you meet. But I guess, yeah, for you guys, think about your front lines and who those people are, what the places are. And also, we want to see fruitfulness on them. And that's like the kingdom of God coming. That's good things. That's fruitful things. And today's talk is called Moulding Culture. So thinking about that, I found this picture of plasticine mould, because that's sort of changing something from one splodgy shape in a mould into another shape that you want it to be. But sometimes when you change things, they then come out in a different way. So in this example, someone's done their plasticine mould and then they've put some funky fruit on it. I think it might be strawberries or something. It's really cool. So when you mould things and change things, we're wanting them to be inspired by what God's dreaming of, what God's ideas are, the kind of culture, the kind of place that God's got in mind. Not like our fixed ideas about, my workplace, everybody must be kind, must be gentle, must be really lovely. You know, it's not like my fixed ideas of what that is. It's God's ideas of what that might be. So we're going to be thinking about that today. The other one is not to confuse moulding culture with mouldy culture, because that's what I got a little bit confused. I was thinking about yogurt in the week as well. So it's sometimes the culture, that's like the way things are in the place, on your front line. What's the kind of the normal way of doing stuff? What's normal there? It would be the culture. So if it's mouldy, then that's like bad. So, but there'll be some good things about the places that you are, and there'll be some bad things. So we're trying to maybe look out for the mouldy things, but hopefully changing those mouldy things into God's kingdom things and good things. The other one is remembering that we're all in very different front lines. So the example, the guy who's put this series together, Mark Green, he came up with this great example, saying for some people it's like growing tomatoes in Italy. You just show the soil a tomato seed and tomatoes everywhere, fantastic. But for some of us, our front lines are a bit more like trying to grow those tomatoes in Iceland. It's really hard. There might be some bad bits about the culture of your front line that you think, is it going to ever change? It's really hard. It's like growing tomatoes in Iceland. But not the supermarket. Like really cold and really difficult. Whereas in Italy, it's fantastic, it's warm, it's lovely. And I suspect that some of your front lines are pretty easy. So if you're a kind of a teaching assistant, a teacher, you've got a classroom. You've got kids who come in bright-eyed and bushy-tailed every morning. Well, Carol, you were explaining to us how in your classroom you just have this thing about, for you, blasphemy is just a no-no, and that's part of the culture of your classroom. But also, I guess some of you guys in the younger schools will be busy putting up posters on the wall, and it's your choice, and you have a lot of choice over what you are teaching to the kids, or even like the way that you're teaching them. Some of us in like an office, I've got some protests here. Some of us in an office-y type place, or if you're doing the checkouts at Tesco's, thinking of you, Karen, then you've just got to do your job. And you've just got to do your job. And of course you can then do it in a way that is a kind of good kingdom way. But you've just got to do your job, because you can't be like putting up posters on the wall and, you know, changing the layout of the supermarket so it's more godlike. No, you've just got to do your job. So, Yeah, so we're all in different places. Although I know we're going to come up with some great ideas today, different ideas of moulding cultures, the ideas that you come up are probably best for like your place, not for somebody else's. Although, yeah, they might overlap, but it's very easy to sort of judge other people's front lines and go, oh, you should do it like this. But that, yeah, it's for us in our own places to work out what God's ideas are, really. Okay, here's the next slide. So this is a great Bible bit here. The idea about culture being the way that we do things, the pattern of things. So do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So Jesus spoke a lot about culture that he was in, like the way things were done when he was alive back in Palestine. So he was noticing the things that were going on, but somehow he was very much in tune with his Father God, and he was able to sort of say hooray to some things and yes to some things that were happening, and notice them and say that was great. So he noticed in the temple they did lots of giving, and he noticed a woman giving, she was a very poor woman, and he noticed her giving a really small amount. And he, I guess, was just very much in tune with his Father God, and he just knew that for her that small amount was, you know, amazing amount to give. For her, relatively, it was a really big thing. She'd sacrificially given lots and lots. And so he recognised that and he celebrated that and said, wow, you know, what she's doing there is great. That was a good thing to be doing. But other people who were giving in a showing off kind of way, he was like, well, no, you know, people see that and they celebrate that kind of giving, but it's not like the best kind of giving, really, to be showing off about it. So he was noticing what was going on around him, the way things were done, and he was able to see the way that God thought about them and either sort of say they're great or they're not great as well. I think the other examples are the way that he really listened to women and was ready to go and be with them. People like Mary and Martha, and then their brother, who later he like brought back to life, Lazarus. But he was talking with her, and which wasn't kind of normal, really, for men to be teaching and talking to women and things. So he was able to treat the women there in a different kind of way than what was normal. So he was challenging the culture of his time by treating them with respect and joining in with what they were doing. I think there's loads of examples of how Jesus did things. Just one more is that I'm not sure if this is like a specific person he was criticising, but he did criticise people who tended to ignore their families for religious reasons and go, oh, well, I'm just going to go off and do my thing because it's for God, ignore looking after my family. And so that was something that he spoke up about and said, no, that's not right. You can't just say this is for God. You've got to be looking after your family. So there's loads of examples of the way that Jesus did things. He saw his culture and he thought about what God, his Father, was saying about it, and he was ready to speak up about it. Okay, can we go on to the next slide? This is a bit of a puzzle here. Could you click again, Dave? So this lady is Emily Dickinson, and she blogs online. She has a blog called Fashionista, I as in looking, because she needs to use a guide dog because she's visually impaired. And she has a fantastically positive blog. She talks about all sorts of fashion things, and from time to time she will say as well about what it's like to be visually impaired. So what happens next? Well, she's walking down the street here. And then Dave, can you click on? And then she might come across clutter in the street. And so this is one of the things that she blogged about. For someone who's visually impaired, it's like really difficult if the workmen have then put all the things in the way and they've not thought about her walking down the street. And this example links in to my workplace because back in the autumn, I got the chance to be involved in a project which was getting the sort of techie water company people together with the customer complaints people who I guess would be hearing from people like Emily Dickinson going, you've dug up the street and you've then put all this mess all over the pavement and you haven't helped me with my guide dog, that kind of thing. But the thing that was, and that was a great event to be involved in at work, and so I had the job of phoning up people, inviting them along. And it was just techie people I was ringing up and customer complaints people. I wasn't really ringing up real people, I was just ringing up people whose job it was to worry about this. I wasn't really ringing up and talking to real people, yeah, the people who are on the pavements. So suddenly I just put it all together with the fact that at our work, our charity of the year, happens to be guide dogs. Oh. And it was at one of the encounter times here, actually. I was praying about it and thinking about the connections and I felt that God had encouraged me to make that link and to find out his contact details and get in touch with our local rep. And I did it. And it was one of those things where on the phone, I was really, really nervous. And I was praying lots as I was making the phone call. And for me, it was making that connection and then talking to him. And also talking in the right way. Because I think I've obviously got a thing about talking to somebody and trying to understand what it's like to be blind and things like that. So it was really challenging for me to ring him up. That was silly. But I did it. And I'm so glad I did, because then he came along. He's a brilliant speaker, and his dog Nutmeg as well came too, of course, and he was able to explain to techie people and water company people all about it. Later on, we found out that the Thames Water person, her favourite charity is also guide dogs, and she is sponsoring a guide dog puppy, but somehow she hadn't made the connection herself, even though she cares about that. She hadn't made the connection. And yet, because she then talked to our local guide dog rep in Swindon and understood from his point of view what it's like, the fact that the water companies and people who dig up the roads, they do sort it all out, really. They have good ways of doing it. And they've just got to do it good on the day. And they've got to look out for people and give them a hand if you need help going around an obstruction. It's that classic one of never just, like, take the blind person across the road because they might not want to go across the road. It's like, talk to the person and listen. It's all that kind of classic stuff. So, yeah, it was just great because then this Thames Water person was then confident enough to say, wow, okay, would you come and train my guys? And so that's all going to happen, I hope. I'm going to have to follow that up. But it's a brilliant example of God really encouraged me to actually make the phone call and invite him in. And I was amazed by the stories that he had, that he was able to share. And he'd been busy training electricity company people who dig up the roads as well. So it all just worked. And that was a small thing about having the guts to phone up someone for me, like, culture thing, not just having the idea and not doing anything. For me, it was like actually doing it. But bigger culture is like across the UK. It's something that, wouldn't it be great if all people sort of accepted that somebody who's visually impaired might, need, it's fine to go and talk to them and say, do you need a hand around this bit of pavement or whatever? It's fine to talk to them. So that's a changing culture kind of thing for the people who are out on the streets as well. Dave, can we look at the film clip now? So, expanding on the ideas of culture and what it means, we're going to hear from Mark Green. He'll explain just a bit more about what culture is.
Both my parents came from Glasgow. My father from Russian, Polish, Orthodox Jewish stock, and my mother from a Northern Irish, Celtic-picked, Scottish, communist, Gentile family. Not surprisingly, I'm completely mixed up. And not surprisingly, their union produced a very huggy-huggy, slobber-slobber, kissy-kissy family culture. Now, when it came to visitors, my mum had two rules. If it moves, kiss it. And if it's still moving, feed it. It was our family culture, the way we did things around our home. And that's one definition of culture, the way we do things around here. Every family has a culture, every workplace, every team, every church, every home group, every front line. a way of doing things around here. Some of it's good, some of it not so good. Some of it downright destructive. Now, my family culture never struck me as unusual until I got to about 10 years old and my reserved Southern English Gentile friends would come round. After a while, I began to notice their discomfort, how they would pad tentatively through the front door like nervous antelope, their ears cocked and their eyes scanning the terrain for danger. And then suddenly they'd whoosh up the stairs faster than Usain Bolt out of the blocks, all to escape the enveloping embrace of the kiss monster. Now, the culture in my home hadn't arisen accidentally. My mum's huggy affection for my friends came out of a whole set of values about community, about hospitality, about food, and about an adult's relationship with her kids' friends. An adult has a duty of care to someone else's child. It is right and good for an adult to show physical affection to someone else's child in greetings and farewells. And it is absolutely imperative that food is offered and that food is eaten. My mother's behaviour emerged out of a set of beliefs. Our beliefs shape our behaviour. If we think eggs are bad for our heart, we don't eat many eggs. But when new research tells us that they aren't, well, bring them on. Scrambled, wet but not runny, with a smidgen of salt, and lots of freshly milled black pepper served on crunchy hot toast. Beliefs shape behaviour. So the question is, how might our Christian beliefs, our kingdom values, shape our behaviour and shape a culture on our front lines that is more likely to help people flourish? How can we, as it says in Jeremiah 29:7, not only pray for, but seek the shalom, the peace and prosperity of the front line God has called us to? What's good about the way people do things on your front line? What's worth cheering? And what isn't good, not only for us, but for others? In Romans chapter 12, Paul exhorts the Christians, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." Paul knows it's pretty easy to end up behaving like everyone else, gossiping, because everyone else does, being a bit too concerned about the sculpting of your abs, because everyone else is. So we look for ways not only to change our own behaviour, but to change the way things are done around us. Perhaps the culture at your gym is very narcissistic, very self-focused. What could you do to make it less so? Well, maybe you might suggest that the Christmas party includes a raffle in aid of kids overseas who need cleft palate surgery, or that the money goes towards a table tennis table for the council's youth club. Perhaps you dislike the way that everyone in your family fiddles with their phones over meals, messes up conversations. So maybe, like one family, you make everyone pop their mobiles into a basket before the meal, like a sheriff in the Wild West confiscating every cowboy's Colt 45 when they ride into town. Wow, 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 wow. Mobiles and Colt 45s can be bad for relationships. Maybe you dislike the way everyone in the retirement home seems to just sit around watching too much TV. So you celebrate everybody's birthday with a multiple choice quiz about their lives so that residents get to know each other. Or you put on a family history hour and relationships deepen. And when a culture becomes more like a kingdom culture, that's fruitfulness. Culture is the way we do things around here. And so it's made up of pretty much everything. The stories we tell, the rituals we have, the rewards that we give, the heroes we admire, the slogans we repeat. Now, there's good news and bad news in that. The bad news is that because values are expressed in all those ways, it can be quite hard to change a culture. The good news is that because values are expressed in all those ways, it can be quite easy to find a way to begin to change a culture. Before I tell you a story, you might want to pause the film and discuss some of the positive and negative aspects of the culture of your front line.
Yep, and that's what we're going to do now. So have a turn to the person by you and think, what's the positives, what's the negatives? Okay, let's feed some of those back. So I'd like to hear some positive, some good things. So I'd like to hear some good things from you, and then some less good things. So some good things that you'd like to share that is happening at the moment. What are the things that you're going to be saying? Yeah, these are great. The things that you might notice as being a bit like God's kingdom already. Any good examples?
Well, I'm getting to at least start that people are greeting me, and I greet them at preschool. I try to make sure, even though I don't know the mums and the dads, okay, that at least I greet them as I go past them.
So kind of friendliness and
friendliness.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. What other ones?
I didn't get a chance to share it while we were talking, but my company have a fairly good no-blame culture.
Okay.
So when things go wrong, it's more about how can you fix this the next time rather than whose fault was it.
And whose fault was it?
Oh dear. Don't worry about that. That sounds a good place to work. They're not chasing down who's done it. Yeah. Any other good ones?
Yeah, we're moving towards that culture. We were at a place where...
Okay, so you're sort of seeing that come again.
And a blame culture.
Trusting people is kind of good, isn't it?
Try to give people their perspective, not ours. Because it's quite easy to, I suppose, that where I work, they don't usually sit all watching in the residential room, sit watching telly all the time.
Okay.
Because they have television in their room if they want to go and see anything. But
yeah,
generally in the lounge, it doesn't go on until the evening after supper.
Okay.
Unless it's something they all want. If they want an afternoon to watch a film, then they all want it, then they don't.
So you finding a good thing is that people's perspective is being...
Yes, it gives them their whatever they want to do rather than what you want them to do.
People have choice of...
You have a choice.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't give choices. And I know I probably do too much for my husband and...
Oh, let's not go there. No. How about some bad things? Any things that you're thinking these are not good? Like, you don't obviously don't have to share them. It's fine. Sue.
There's one young colleague who's quite nervous, but she teases people. She would say
okay,
it in a nice way.
Yeah.
But it's not really, and any of it is not. Even if she thinks it's a joke, it is negative.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's trying to find a way to say to her, you know, to communicate without cutting her off at the knees.
Yeah. I guess the thing is, if that becomes like a culture, if that becomes what everyone does, if that's normal, then
it, so that is part. You know, it's sort of accepted. So
I guess if you ignore things, sometimes they become accepted. Sometimes everyone does it. Yeah, that's a challenge. But
I wouldn't put one in this bracket. Don't throw it at me. But in my job, I say it's pen.
Who? What? No. What's the culture? What's the culture?
I'm a teacher.
But what I don't quite get what you're saying. What's the bad thing in the? Oh, I can't even say that, can I? What's the bad thing with the parents?
No. What do you mean? Parents accept the teacher as a professional, and you make a professional decision on what's
yeah,
right for their child while they're in your presence, 9 to 3.
Yeah.
Now it's our teacher's fault if something goes wrong in that time.
Okay.
Whatever.
So you, as teachers, teachers are getting blamed by parents, is what you mean? Right. Okay. I'll get there eventually.
Yeah. Progress in meeting.
So that sounds like a blame culture again.
That's what they. But could you put a small percentage?
a little bit. Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that, because the story now is all about a school. So let's have a look at this story. Thank you.
teacher of a primary school in Glasgow. And one day, something really quite bad happened. A 10-year-old boy, a particular 10-year-old boy, who'd had a long history of being a troublemaker, and we'll call him Alex, had gone ballistic in the school playground, shouting and swearing and screaming. A member of staff had gone out to try to defuse the situation, talked to one of the other children, and was pretty convinced that actually Alex was to blame. A second member of staff came up and also was convinced that Alex was to blame. And then a third, and Alex then lost his temper, and he ran out into the school field. Elaine, the head teacher, was informed, and she went out to talk to him. "It wasn't me, miss. It wasn't me. I didn't do it. They wouldn't listen. They just wouldn't listen." Well, Elaine believed him, went back into the school and talked to the other child who was involved, who owned up. And then she went to the three members of staff who'd been involved and told them that Alex was innocent. And they went and apologised to him. And subsequently, the other child involved also apologised to Alex. I wonder what strikes you about that particular story. Well, one thing is that Elaine really, really listened to Alex. And she didn't prejudge the situation based on his past behaviour. An habitual troublemaker learned what it feels like to be treated as if they'd never done anything wrong before. As if the past really is the past. She made sure that justice was done. She showed other people the ways of the king. What was it about Elaine's school that three members of staff should apologise to a child? Well, when Elaine arrived at the school, she decided the kind of culture that she wanted to create. She knew that many cultures end up being blame cultures, where people in authority never, ever apologise. She didn't want a blame culture. She wanted a forgiveness culture. So right from the start, she told parents, she told staff, she told the children that she'd make decisions, but that she'd also probably make some mistakes. And if they didn't like something she did, then they should come and talk to her about it, and if she agreed, she would apologise and then go do something about it. And that's exactly what she's done.
Yeah, so interesting that the stories that we've heard have shared that idea of blame cultures, and then Rolf was saying about his place changing. Just a few thoughts. Places take a long time to change, but it's us grabbing hold of what God can see in a place and how it could be. I'd love every workplace, every front line, every school gate, or if your front line is meeting with friends, that kind of thing. I'd love them all to be a forgiveness culture, or to be a place where people are trusted, to be a place where people are greeted. It does take time to get there. And there are some of us who will be able to make, you know, those big changes, like being the head teacher. And for some of us, we can only change the things that we say or the things that we do. Being ready to forgive people ourselves and do the apologising bit ourselves without being prompted by the head teacher, I suppose, in that case. Some of these things are big changing things, and then some are really small things. Can we have the next slide? So another Bible bit. Jesus told us Christians, us Christ followers, that we are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So Jesus is telling us that the salt, like really good stuff, brings flavour. I guess in the examples we were just hearing about, the forgiveness, you know, bringing forgiveness, being ready to forgive ourselves, being hopeful of the way things are done, being hopeful of the culture changing. If we can be like that, wow. Jesus also says we're light, so that would be lighting up bad stuff, maybe lighting up good stuff and going, this is great, the way that we're, well, in my workplace, the charity stuff is fab, and that has changed over time. Like, people will happily go around with a bucket saying, you know, I'm running a marathon for whatever, and they can do that. Whereas I think some workplaces, that just wouldn't happen. So I know that's a bit of a showing off charity, but it's kind of, it's also good, it's encouraging people to give, isn't it? So there's light on good things and saying, wow, yeah, yeah, supporting your charity is great, I'll throw in a bit as well, kind of thing. And sometimes it's lighting up bad things, and those are the times when it's sometimes it's obvious you've got to say something, and other times you don't, you just pray and you kind of ask God about what to do. So Dave, can we have the next slide? So for you guys, another chance to talk with those next to you. What do you think? Are there places on your front line that you'd like to see God change? And if you've got the guts, you can ask each other to pray for each other, or if you feel like doing it. But it's just initially having that conversation. Where are the places on your front line, or just a particular thing you'd like to change? And this is not big and heavy. For me, I really appreciate the fact that some of the other women in the workplace will come up to me about 12 o'clock and go, chance your walk, Donna. And that is brilliant. And that's not, for them, that's just happened. And that didn't used to happen. It just does now. And that's really friendly. So that's like not a big, huge thing. That's like a being friendly and noticing that someone else might want to walk. And that just happens now. Most days, people sort of go, oh, do you want to? And that's part of our, in that sort of group that we were in, that's a kind of a really good culture thing. So there's things like that, that there might be something you think, oh, I wish people would, you know, have a chat over the coffee break instead of ignoring each other. You know, there are those kind of things that are good relationship building things, as well as the big, you know, blame culture stuff as well. So share with those next to you, what would you like to see changing? Okay, let's wrap it up there. I'm resisting. So, I'm really encouraged because you're chatting, that's good. And those are conversations to keep going, to find out, you know, if you guys have prayed about it, then, you know, that's brilliant. And I think those are questions that you can keep asking each other over the weeks. Thinking back over what we've covered, we've looked at culture, the way that things are done, and God has a dream, an idea of changing it so that it is more like the kingdom, really good things. And we're part of that because we're the salt and the light. So I hope that you've been encouraged today, that you can make changes, like small changes, and it's how you do things. But also you can be praying about God changing places totally, like this whole blame culture that came up. And I'm sure there's plenty of other stories that haven't been shared wider. So that's really good, and I'll leave it there.